This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandhu. Since its debut in 1989, the internet has revolutionized commerce, communications, military actions, governance, healthcare, banking, and the list just goes on and on and on. In fact, much of the modern world today is simply inconceivable without the internet. This, however, this so-called revolution, has not come without a price. The annual cost of cybercrime has now climbed to more than $1 trillion, and the cost was only half just a few years back. That rapid increase is only just the beginning. So with that in mind, we're now seeing cyber insurance policies being offered, also referred to as cyber risk insurance or cyber liability insurance coverage, to help organizations mitigate the risk exposure by offsetting costs involved with recovery after a cyber-related security breach. Does this even work? And if so, how? Well, here with me today to talk about the journey so far and as to how we got here in the first place is Paul Davies. He's the Regional Chief Financial Officer for Allianz Global Corporate and Specialty. Paul, wow, the times have changed. Let's rewind back the clock to the early days of cybercrime so that we can understand just how did we actually got here? What was different back then?
I think if we look at the phrase that we're using, cybercrime, right now, I think the crime element was always there. And let me give you some examples on that. If we're looking at financial crime, such as banking, imagine that you had a check or a checking account. There were always frauds on that checking account through somebody changing a payee name or somebody changing a signature.
It reminds me of Catch Me If You Can, the movie.
A little bit like that. But then you move on. And you have various internal processes that an organization had where maybe they were manually signing things, which had now moved into an automated space. And then we look at the journey through Y2K. We shouldn't forget that because I think everybody was talking about planes dropping out the sky and other things where if we didn't change the dates on our computers. So what's really changed since then? We've obviously got, technology's got a lot smarter, technology's got a lot smaller. So rather than just protecting kind of internal equipment for an organization, we're having to protect it against the Internet of Things. So anything, including a smartphone with an internet connectivity. The key thing from today compared to yesterday is the speed of transaction, and the speed of transaction is really giving us the number of transactions, so multiplying up the amount of times that something could happen.
So crime itself has been prevalent since the dawn of money itself, right?
Exactly.
But with the digital side, the element of cyber crime that kicked in, what kind of sparked that there was real money to be made in the cyber crime world? Was it the mobile phone? Was it the internet banking? What was that factor?
I think it comes down, if we're looking at, I think there's a couple of elements. The two things that we've really seen are the phishing attempts. The phishing attempts, firstly, are the ones where it's pretty crude in terms of the way it's set up. But if we look at that aspect of things, phishing attempts come from from information a company decides to share with the external market. So if I think about a phishing attempt, CFOs get phishing attempts quite a lot. So let me just tell you that. Information's being gained from external websites that have information about who the key people are within an organization. Now, a company can choose whether they share that information or not, but the company needs to, at the end of the day, understand it needs to trade. So it needs to give information to be customer-centric. So it needs to trade that off against internal cybersecurity around phishing and phishing awareness. So that's a particularly good example of how information can work for an organization and also work against an organization. So the speculative phishing can be got through firewalls and obviously other technologies. The other emerging threat is obviously from ransomware. So what we're seeing from ransomware is ransomware infecting computers where the appropriate controls have not been maintained, demanding payments, and it's basically you pay or you basically don't get your information back.
We've seen it with the, even hijacking autonomous vehicles or vehicles that are somewhat connected to the internet. Absolutely. Ransomware is also prevalent in those areas as well.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a key area for any organization to look at, especially if they're looking at connecting into the market. Mm. And any organization that's holding personal data, including insurers, has a right to maintain that data under the relevant Data Protection Act.
Mm. That talk, that data itself, right? Yeah. Data is apparently the oil for the future. And, yeah, you know, we've got so many laws that we will talk about it in just a bit. But what has made data so valuable that people go to so much, you know, to a degree of, you know, learning how to, you know, hack into a system just to get data itself? And why was this data became so much more valuable now?
Every company should know what data they're holding. That data could be linked to credit card information. It could link to personal financial information. Mm. It's an access into an area of a person. And if we multiply that by the amount of data, we know what's being held. Now, that data is either being held for ransom from the company itself, or it's being held for the highest bidder in the open market, for somebody that's maybe a little bit more devious, to really exploit that data in the worst possible ways.
Because data is not just on paper anymore these days. It's
data is there. It's in a number of different places in the organization. And I think the challenge for any C-suite within an organization is that they've got to have all of this mapped out, just in terms of the areas where they're confident, the areas of vulnerabilities. They've got to have a plan. And they've also got to have a risk mitigation perspective.
What are we seeing today? Because we've seen, you know, a few years ago, or at least last year, we've seen, you know, Petya and WannaCry and, you know, these kind of attacks that are large scale. At this point of time, what are we seeing that's prevalent, especially in this part of the region? Because we seem to have a lot of these attacks, these ransomware attacks that happen outside of...
In the experience, there's three types. There's the ransomware attacks, which we've already discussed. There is the phishing. And those breaches from somebody in the organization intercepting an email or diverting funds from an email that says, "Can you make an urgent payment, please?" Or a bank phoning, say, or somebody's pretending to be the bank phoning an organization and stating that accounts need to be moved and details need to be shared, and those leading to financial loss. But I think we shouldn't forget the third one. The third one is organizations where, if we look at an organization, the risk of IT failure, as IT reliance becomes more prevalent within an organization, the risk of IT failure causing serious reputational damage to a company.
What do you mean by the risk of IT failure?
So if you're looking at maybe an airline company and maybe the passenger booking system goes down. Without a passenger booking system, you can't run an airline. Therefore, it could lead to a market loss, refunds to customers, reputational damage, loss to the share price, profitability.
It's keeping the lights on in the digital side.
It's absolutely keeping the lights on in the digital side. So I think any program where we're looking at evolving trends also needs to look at cleaning the company's own house and making sure the risks are mitigated properly there.
And Paul, like, a lot of these attacks that we see year after year, they're not necessarily new. They may have a very new funky name to it, it catches on, but when we break it down and we look into the fundamentals of how it began, it seems like it's just the same old tactics year after year. What are we not doing right?
I think from what we're seeing right now is that technology has progressed such a lot exponentially in the last number of years. If we're looking at people's perception of cyber risk 5 years ago. Allianz produce what we call a risk barometer that looks at the top 10 risks across the world, across countries, and we look at various dynamics. So we generally take about 2,000 risk experts from around 80 countries, and about 400 of those respondents from Asia. And we plot that in charts. So cyber incidents continue to be on the Allianz Risk Barometer, but 5 years ago it was ranked number 15.
Wow.
2018, globally and in Asia Pacific, that's ranked number 2. So cyber exposure or exposure to cyber is a big concern for companies. Mm. If we're looking at number one is the more traditional business interruption of an organization. And that is kind of stock outages or something like that. So you have an event going on in Asia, stops a product being produced in Americas. Mm. Obviously, you have a business, that's the more traditional business interruption.
Mm.
Now, just think about the way companies are evolving and their linkage into kind of more digital factories, logistics, and really the next industrial revolution about how things are looking. And look at how a traditional business interruption, because an incident happened, could also be very much linked to a cyber incident. I think the lines are blurring right now.
Yeah.
And I think there's the general realization that as technology moves forward, then individuals are gonna need to find the linkage between these two pieces, because they're an integral part of the business.
Mm.
And that's on top of everything else that people are concerned about, which tend to be things more like regulatory change, changes in government and legislation and those elements. Mm. So if you add up to the top 10 with this cyber area in there, I think there's some challenging times ahead for companies just with the cost of compliance.
Mm. And also because technology is seeping into almost every sector, from agriculture to fintech to medical.
It's
literally almost every. How has this changed? So you talk about the changes in industries. How has this changed for yourselves, Allianz, as an insurance provider, and now looking into cybersecurity and providing insurance in this sector itself? How has this changed for you?
I think if you look, there is obviously a different insurance conversation to have in a retail space where insurance is a little bit more of a commodity. From Allianz Global Corporate and Specialty perspective, we tend to be insurers of Fortune 500 companies. So the data is important to understand what these companies are. And we look at international programs for these global organizations. And that essentially means that we have to know information about how the country, how the company looks from a global perspective, in order to make sure that they have a tax compliant program, but also that we understand about the factories in Asia as well as we understand about the main factories that might be based in Europe, for example.
Mm.
So data becomes particularly important when you're trying to connect all these things together to understand more about a company or a client. And then if you move that forward into the cyber world, I think we're looking at more partnerships with more tech companies at the moment, in terms of, okay, we have traditional ratings of risk, but how do we get a cyber rating of risk? And it's really partnering in with the expert risk managers in those fields to find out how we actually can balance and how we can actually really assess risk from both traditional methods and the new emerging themes.
I'm speaking to Paul Davies, the Regional Chief Financial Officer for Allianz Global Corporate and Specialty. We'll be right back after this. BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and I'm here with Paul Davies, the Regional Chief Financial Officer for Allianz Global Corporate and Specialty. Paul, let's talk about the cyber insurance a little bit more. What is it exactly, and how should we be looking at cyber insurance? is this the answer to our worries? Like, should this be the way we approach it? Like, you know, this is the solution?
I wouldn't say. I mean, it would be pretty difficult for me to hear to sit as an insurer and say the way out of this is for me to buy more insurance for the organization. I don't think it works. I think if you look at the traditional view of insurance, it was about risk mitigation.
Mm.
It's about providing financial security to your balance sheet in the event that there's a risk that's above your accepted risk threshold that you couldn't sustain. And that's going to be in the areas of reputational damage, if you're looking at it. It's going to be the impairment to your assets. And let's think about assets now being more intangible assets rather than traditional companies, red brick companies 10 years ago being more tangible. And that's going to be kind of confidence to shareholders and also customers as well. So if we're putting all of that together, we're looking at essentially the importance of the risk manager in any company becoming vital to across his management team, across his board members, in terms of managing this risk. Because anything that you can't manage, you're going to have to find a way to transfer the risk. I think anecdotally, what we're seeing at the moment is, obviously because this is quite new, the take-up in cyber insurance in certain countries has been quite low. And that's because we believe what's happening at the moment is that from a risk management perspective, people are investing internally into their systems first to get them up to a certain standard. Then they will look at the insurance options. So,
And that standard is important even from your perspective. You would definitely go in to look at what sort of level of security measures that they have taken up, these organizations have taken up in place to give them like a rating in that sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've actually got cyber risk managers that would do cyber assessments on particularly large companies. There's a lot that can be done from standard declarations, but I think we're looking at bespoke risks here, and if we're trying to sell something bespoke and tailor-made to an organization, we absolutely need to understand those aspects and have access to that information so that we can have a look at recommendations as to what they can improve, but also where they need to kind of use the insurance as a risk transfer.
How is this a legitimate business model for an insurance company, knowing that the market is very much at risk? You know, you never know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
Despite learning the entire years of, you know, the internet's existence itself.
Yeah.
And from your perspective, like, how can you be assured that it is still a legitimate business model for Allianz?
Just in terms of cyber?
Just for cyber itself, for cyber insurance.
I think if we look at it, what we're actually seeing now is that the US market for cyber has developed somewhere in the region of $3 billion. The biggest reason for that larger penetration in the US is due to state breach notification laws in the last 10 years. So they've built quite a big market. If we look at the general data protection regulations in Europe, which will go live on the 25th of May, they will be adopted under European law and markets. And that's going to create many wide-ranging new areas of liability for companies in the event of data breaches. So this is not a topic that's going to go away. In Asia, we have pockets in areas where India, Malaysia, Philippines, and Singapore, to name a few, have already come into laws of already with data protection regulation have already come into force. And the Singapore laws, if we're looking at it, are amongst the stiffest in the region, about $1 million, penalties up to $1 million. So the company's got to look at that, it's got to look at the regulatory fines and everything else. So I don't think it's a business model that's going to go away. I think what's going to happen in the future is this is actually, as we move forward with data, there's going to be more discussions with the legislators, with the regulators, about how we get better at this. Mm.
And at the end, when we look at reports, we see, you know, next year there will be more types of attacks. Some may be decreasing, but attacks or different forms of attacks will be increased. And from your perspective, being a provider of cyber insurance, the last thing you want is more attacks will be carried out, because that's where, you know, it's going to affect your business. So how do you then ensure or sort of give that assurance to the organizations that, you know, implementing these would actually help you to prevent? Is it because there are a lot of organizations who don't quite know where to go with when it comes to cybersecurity?
I think it's always a little bit of a double-edged sword with regard to that. The challenge is it's still a relatively new threat. And obviously, the companies have got to weigh up the option between developing their system for profit and how much risk mitigation they put in there. I don't think if we're looking at an employee's insurance, a company's insurance program right now, they've actually got the joined up thinking that the technology is playing a wider role within the organization. So I think that needs to be quite clear for them. And I think obviously there's still a "it's not going to happen to me" mentality within any kind of profile of the company. I think companies have a view of how strong their controls are. But you never know. I think there's some companies that have been in the press recently where you would have thought that they would take cybersecurity, and they do take cybersecurity very seriously, and they've come up on the wrong side of an attack.
Yeah, we've seen big names around the world over the last few years of, you know, whether it's a hacking breach or whether it's, you know, loss of information or just downtime itself, right? When it comes to that, is that, do you feel like this part of the region, there's still a lot more of work to be done in order to get people to a certain level of being protected in, you know, in that rating itself that you give them, right? Do you feel that there's a lot more groundwork to be done here in this part of the region before they could finally, you know, understand, yes, you know, cyber insurance is what I would need because I'm now finally in a certain rating at this point in time, man?
I think businesses are taking it seriously, but I think what they're doing now is they're using, there's a certain amount of spend an organization can sustain on their IT development and their IT protection. And what they're choosing to do right now is to spend it internally on building their security rather than choosing risk transfer as a way to go. I think as these attacks build, we've got quite a low history of claims data or data around cyber, just because it's such a new product and it's such a new event. And I think over time, what we can learn and what insurers can learn for that and share with their clients and customers, distribution partners, we can actually learn quite a lot from each other about how these events develop and how things are developing into the future.
And Paul, if you could take off your Allianz hat for a moment here, and you know, what should we as in organizations should look for when we are looking to buy cyber insurance, when we're becoming a cyber insurance buyer here? Because it is a new thing, as you mentioned. What are some of the areas that we should be looking out for?
Okay, so I mean, I think if you look at cyber as a product, it's fairly wide ranging. If you look at what we want to cover, we're going to cover a range of things, and it's all component based. So that's the important part of knowing a client. So we can look at kind of liability, traditional liabilities of third party or first party liability, so business interruption. We can look at mitigation costs. We can look at restoration in the event of reputational loss. So it's looking at all those individual components and understanding exactly what a customer, me as a customer, what I'm worried about out of that list. And it would probably be impossible the price, if we're looking at that and I wanted everything off the list, the price would probably be an impossible price. So then I think what you've got to do is you've got to say, right, what are my expectations from the risk transfer and what can I actually do internally? And I think it's having that conversation, striking the balance between having the needs of the risk transfer and having the needs of the internal controls in the organization.
It's also a little bit of prioritizing what's more important at this at any point in time for the organization and then moving forward with that, right? You can't have like an all-in-one to just, you know, it's a cyber insurance that protects me from everything from start to end, because that would be, you know, financially, they'll be really difficult.
I think that would be financially prohibitive in this day and age, depending on the organization, obviously. But I think this is quite a new product, so there's pricing challenges with it. There's a lack of history, as I say. And as we learn from history, we get smarter.
And also, there are companies who still are very traditional in the IT sector, where it's a lot of on-premise. You know, they would do their own firewall, end-to-end protection. And then there are some that are a little bit more agile, the startups who would engage with cloud providers and would rely everything on the cloud and would even security to the extent. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with then? I understand it's still a very new thing, but how do you deal with the different types of businesses that operate in the digital space?
I mean, if you look at it, I would treat any external supplier to the organization as something that you have offshored from your day-to-day running. In certain places in Asia, offshoring carries some context around it about what you're going to do and how you should control your offshoring supplier. I think with connectivity, you need to be sure that where your data is ending up, if it is ending up in a cloud, is the final resting place, and it's the controls are right. So I think there needs to be very much due diligence on any supplier that you actually engage in this environment in this day and age. It is the agile way of doing it, but you need to obviously look at their track record, and you obviously need to be confident in their control environment. So it is, again, it's like any supplier and organization would have. They need to be a long-term partner for any organization, so you need to carry out internal resilience checks to make sure they're going to be there.
And as an insurance provider, how do you keep up with the pace in the cybersecurity sector? Because I'm assuming here that it's not, you know, the you don't have the knowledge of cybersecurity companies, for example. So is there partnerships that you have in order to understand the landscape better and also to be able to keep up, you know, with the pace and the change of times?
I mean, I think if we look at pace and change, there's obviously things that we do as insurers. Any time that there is change in the environment to do with regulation, to do with the environment we're trading in, we try and work with the regulators and the government bodies in order to, when they're discussing their exposure drafts and ideas, we try to be part of the solution. Because ultimately, it's pointless complaining after something has been decided and put into law. So I think that's one thing that we can very much do. I think if we look at other elements, I think it's quite hard to really predict how things are going to look going forward.
We'd be rich if we knew.
And I think somebody with the next big idea would definitely, yeah.
But it's still exciting times, despite the risk that we seem to face, and more doors are being opened to the digital space with IoT and, connected traffic lights and all that. It's still a very exciting space, and businesses can still thrive and be secure and at least have that assurance of this is the right way forward, thanks to cyber insurance kind of policies that are now coming into place in the market.
I absolutely agree. I mean, the way that technology has moved forward in the last 10 years actually makes you think a little bit if you go back and think how far we've come. And there's a lot of learning to do, so we don't have all the answers. But I think the momentum for technology is not going to stop.
Mm.
So we need to be there for our business partners, for our suppliers, as a way to look at their balance sheet risk differently.
Paul, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much.
And I've been speaking to Paul Davies, the Regional Chief Financial Officer for Allianz Global Corporate and Specialty. And we've been talking about cyber insurance in general. If you missed any parts of today's show, you can download the podcast. It's available on bfm.my or get the app. It's available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and this has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.